you very much for the promotion. But a temporary promotion. Let's agree to that. Welcome, honorable members, and welcome. I know the surname is Kashalia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know Kashalia. But when I was speaking to you there, you were not there in that name. Then I just thought that I've seen somebody from the media that is just come, that's having interest in our work. I could not recognize you until then when somebody presses the button.
Okay.
But welcome to this committee.
Thank you.
So we have got, or should I say that? Because somebody had a problem by talking about oversupply. I wouldn't want to get into the same pot like money. you see. Then, but we appreciate the interest. We hope that your presence here, whether temporary or permanent, should add value in the work of Home Affairs. And today we are going to speak to the report that we need to adopt today. Honorable members, I will definitely need your help because for some other reason known to Almighty God, the budget debate has been scheduled for tomorrow. And then, therefore, we are obliged to sit here until we agree on the report today, that it gets tabled today, for us to be able to speak to it tomorrow afternoon. And otherwise, then there would be a programming problem. But I can guess that honorable members are... we have been doing this, I think, for ages, and it's something that we are used to. And of course, is that there is the annual business plan that we are supposed to have looked at it a lot more earlier, but it clashed with quite a good number of activities that we have been doing. This portfolio committee is the most busiest, I can guess, after Standing Committee on Finance. Yeah, we are really too busy. But it is not a surprise. I think Honorable Kashade, Home Affairs deals with all the plus minus 56 million people every day. We keep their information available. And also even the date. Home Affairs has to keep their data available as and when anybody wants to know about somebody that dies 15 years back. They must be able to say on their computer and give information. And over and above that, everybody that thought South Africa is a good place to visit, like many, and decide to come here, once they get within our border, Home Affairs needs to have some sort of documentation to show to the people that we know about the presence of this person. But unfortunately, of course, we have got extra 2, 3, 4 million others, would estimate a lot of those that we are striving to document, and we are finding it difficult. But they are here. Sometimes when you protest on the road, they are part of us, but we don't know their presence. You see. And when they close roads there, they need water. Sometimes those very people that we don't know, not documented, they are there on the street. You see. So this is the Home Affairs that you have joined with all its troubles. And then... Honorable,
is an alternate or what? We must know what.
We will be informed by the shadow minister of Home Affairs Honorable Hussein will inform us as time goes on. Up to now, we have not been informed, but we just simply recognize his presence. We know, of course, that he has been announced that he's an honorable member now. He has taken an oath in the speaker's office. We are informed. Then the deployment to the committee, then it is, they will be informed by the right persons. We are, in the midst of us, we have got the minister, Professor Mkhize, here. And then we have got Nompumelelo Madlala, the parliamentary liaison officer for the minister. Then we have got Leborang Mutiba, the researcher. Then we have got Muzi as well, is the parliamentary liaison officer of the Department of Home Affairs. Then we have got the acting PA, Ms. Letuli. Then we have got the media director, O Sabat. Yeah.
Chair, I think it should be proper when you call their name, just to wait so we can see who's.
Oh, okay. Let's see the media director. The spin doctor.
Okay.
When the minister is in trouble, will come and ask you questions. You see, then Ulutuli, Miss Lutuli. There she is at right the
and
other
she's
side.
What?
Acting PA.
Okay. For the minister.
Yes, I'm sure the minister will deal with that acting.
Alright.
Very soon. Then, And then Leborang Mutiba, the researcher, there he is. And then Madlala, you are sure to better stand up. No, they see you. Umuzi Njoko. Yes. And then Nyambona, the PLO, the departmental PLO,
okay.
Liaison Office. Department of Home Affairs, the liaison officer, Muzi Njoko. Then, Madlala is the liaison officer for the minister. Remember that you have got the department, then you have got the ministry. Yes. Until they harmonize that, and then they would operate like that. And, then we have got apologies for late arrival of Honorable Kenya. And then also we have got an apology for Dr. Melder. And any other person that is not here is here without an apology. Any other one. So thank you very much. Like as I've said, Honorable Members, I hope that all of you received the draft report sometimes last week around Friday. Is that correct, Ada? On Friday. And then...
through email?
Yes. But whenever they were going to protest, I mean, they will go up on Monday. Yes.
Even though my colleague here didn't.
No, there is a reason why Dambuza may not have received. No, she became a yo-yo for the past 4 days.
Okay.
Yeah. She became a yo-yo for the past few days, and then there is likely to be a little bit of a confusion. But I hope that now she has got, you have got copies now in front of you. Honorable members, I think we were here when the department spoke to us. We were here when the IEC spoke to us. We were here when GPW spoke to us. We have heard them. And then the most important thing, because much of the things that are on the report is exactly what we have been told. Nothing else. And then the processing started happening on from page, let me me just indicate to you. From page 10, paragraph 6, that is where the processing actually started.
Page
10? Page 6, page 10. Anything from item number or paragraph number 1 to number 6 is traditional things and actual facts that we have been told. The processing is only on noting or observations on the things that we have been told and the recommendations. And the other thing that we need to be saying as well is that we have taken decisions in the past, even last year on these particular. The decisions that we have taken in the past still hold. It is our decision. We will always visit those decisions on last year's one. Annual report as well, those decisions. You, honorable members, when you've got copies, you can always visit them. And if you think that there is a resolution or recommendation that we have made and you are not seeing it being attended to, you can raise it at any time. It's not that last year's APP recommendations will be replaced by this one, this one. No. It's a continuation of the work. And then those that we know that we have taken last year, they still hold until the department do something about them, or until time deals with those recommendations that they become irrelevant. Because certain things, they are only beneficial when they are done on a particular time. But when some time goes past, then they actually become irrelevant to be done because other things will overtake them. And then. So I would have loved the honorable members to seriously look at 6 of the committee observations and just see whether they represent some of the things that have been said, and then so that then we can look at the recommendations. But I've tried to assist the committee secretary on certain sentences that tried to speak to the next session. Remember, with the IEC, we had the APP for the IEC, and then we had a report on the post-mortem of last year's election. It has got nothing to do with the APP. So that's why that two sentences that we're talking to that, then I asked them to remove them because they are irrelevant to what we are trying to do. We'll possibly have our minutes. We'll record exactly that session of the post-mortem. Then we would have that. Or you prepare a separate report for the post-mortem of the election. Just a separate report on it. And then the minister can refer to that report and also refer to his APP on the APP side. Then I think we'll have done our work a little bit smarter. Now, what I wanted to say now, honorable members, is on the Department of Home Affairs, we have got 6.1.1 up to 6.1.6. Certain things are, of course, is that we repeat them, but they are a lot more crucial to really keep them within the minds of the officials of Home Affairs. Is there any one of them that you are not agreeing with? Then we amend it and then look selling. Because these observations, they are actually leading us to the recommendations. If they are not correct, then we may have incorrect recommendations. They need to be correct for us to derive recommendations from them. 6.1.1, The requirement for registration of birth within 30 days together with its benefits has not been publicized enough to the public by DHA. We have been speaking about this one, which, you know, there must be pamphlets, there must be patois at the clinics, then there must be posters and the rest. And then, but we are not winning the fight. Hence we're still keeping it there. Anyone that has got a problem with it? Honorable Hussein, do you have a problem?
No, Chair, I'm fine with it. I'm just waiting to get to the recommendations part. How do we surely get there?
You're fine with 6.1.1 until 6.1.6.
The observations, you're not going to be able to disagree with.
Okay, it's Tope.
No.
Stroke, Mkhali.
Aye, it's not Lalele, Chair.
Ushab.
Yeah, Lalele.
Okay. Gumed. On the Department of Home Affairs, the observations.
Come the Chair before Gumed. 6.1.3.
Yes.
It's really clear, it's Chair.
Yeah, I think there are people whose ID have been blocked by Home Affairs on suspicion that they are non-citizens. And then when I asked, when we checked this, I think we have been speaking about it. Probably it may be one of those meetings that you have not been able to. Yeah. That meeting when she was preparing for evening. Yes. Yes. We spoke about that.
When I was preparing
for
evening. And you didn't come because we did that.
Yeah.
And you didn't come because we're jailers.
No, I was not. I was not in my
cell.
Okay. I'm a Masha, need a TV. So it's, what has happened is that some of them, I think, the people that got IDs somewhere around the 93, towards the 94 elections and the first local government election, there has been an open field, and then almost everybody went to Home Affairs office and get IDs, and even those that were from Mozambique, Swaziland, so to, then they've got IDs, and then that says that they are citizens. But now it looks like they are frequenting a lot back to their home countries, which actually renders them to be having some sort of dual citizenship, whereas it is not dual citizenship. And then some of them, then those IDs, Home Affairs immigration inspectors or investigators are actually trying to talk to those that they can clearly identify that they are having two homes. So we have had people that complained. I think people in Komaz, I'm sure Kize even went there, the DDG, yes, even went there, I think in Komaz area, to go and address them. And we can expect that some of the people may be around the Soto as well, around some of them may be the border communities with Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia. And then, so there is this particular problem. Remember, the intention is that our national population register must be cleaned, must represent the people of South Africa, citizens of South Africa, and also speak to those that we accord them that citizenship, whether temporary or permanent. It must actually represent them. Currently, you have got people that are actually not necessarily South Africans, but they are holding an ID like me and you. And those people, they know that they are not South African. Come Good Friday, they go back home.
Mm-hmm.
Come December, then they go back home. You see.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you see, what is very funny is that when Zimbabweans go to the polls, they go home, then they vote. When South Africa goes to the polls, they come here, then they vote. You see. So is that it is important, I think, it is in the interest of the country to have a population register that reflects more or less the true number of South Africans that are eligible to determine who leads them, who governs them. But then now is that exercise of Home Affairs then has got consequences. Many people, you see, they only pick it up when they go and try and apply for a smart card. When they go and apply for a smart card, then is then that no, the ID is blocked. You see, because they are nowhere to be found. In the normal day, you can't find them on the addresses that when they applied for the ID in 1993 or so, they're no longer living at that address. Some of them were on the farms, they've been fired from the farms. When you go back to the farm, they don't even know now of that person, whether that person existed on that farm. You see. So the only thing is that the ID gets blocked for the person to come back to the office when he finds the ID is blocked. But majority of them, they don't even bother to go back there because they know what's going to happen. They don't even go. But then what happens is that like, those that IDs have been blocked, then they group and complain as a choir and attract the attention of all of us for their problem to be sorted as a club. Because those that if it goes alone, then only your individual problem will be dealt with, and then you get investigated, you get told, but you know, Chief Wena, when you got this idea, South Africa, man, you are a Swazi. You are a Swazi national. And then they prove that you are a Swazi national. They tell you exactly what you have gone to Swaziland on this day, and traveling on the Swazi passport. You see. But you have got this particular document that says you are South Africa. You have got South African passport, the ID, but you have got the Swazi passport. So those are the things that are happening. They actually reveal quite a lot. We hope that that program is Home Affairs should speed it up. But I think the one thing that is going to solve our problem on the population register is for us to fast track the smart ID card and do away with the green ID book. That is what's going to force everybody else to come in line and solve their problems of non-citizenship and citizenship. I hope I've tried to explain it now, Honorable. So. Okay. So we must wait for Gumede to come and comment on Home Affairs. Because it was a point of before from Honorable Top. I think what we may be missing here, Ada, is the issue in relation to the migration police. Because the thing that is supposed to be running until it gets concluded, I think it's the one thing that we may be missing under 6.1. It's part of the business of this financial year. Doesn't matter up to when it is processed, but it must be processed within this period. Remember that they came, they presented it to us, and then we had a colloquium or something else with the neighboring states, The question is the next step must be taken to the next level. This year on that migration policy, what is there that going to, so that he captures it correctly?
David might put it better, but basically it's to continue with the
Now it must go. It must go to the next step of the white paper.
The white paper.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Because remember that migration policy will lead us to have a new immigration bill. And possibly a new refugee bill. Yes, new, not amendments. So I think that's what we are meant to understand is that then we will have now to review those two so that they actually reflect the new migration policies. So which means is that it needs to be taken to certain levels that takes us towards that. Then I think it's just hit your head, where are the crafters? And then David and Adam, with how you capture it, and then when you are finished, then you'll tell us. Okay.
The White Paper on International Migration needs to be engaged on an intergovernmental and regional level to facilitate implementation.
Okay.
That's the recommendation.
You are comfortable with that.
But does the ultimate objective?
No. I think here you have to remove this issue of legislation. It's in observation that the migration policy then has been consulted or whatever, blah blah blah. Then you stop there. Then that issue of legislation comes on the recommendation. That's what next now that must happen.
Okay.
Yes. Assist us to craft that.
Don't
be in a hurry.
I don't know, your mic.
Come again?
Is your mic working?
Oh. I actually lent it to Adam, then he did not bring it back. So is that what I'm saying is that on this one you must just simply indicate on observation is what has happened to the migration policy only. Then in the recommendation, what we are recommending to happen now moving forward. And then if they can just work on that, I think it will come in possibly as 6.1.7. Will that make us happy, Honorable Gumer?
Honorable Chairperson, I am satisfied with that. But I also wanted us to pay attention to 6.14.
Yes.
6.14 is that there is a frequent breakdown in connectivity at the Department of Home Affairs. That is what we observe. On which the department depends on CETA.
Yeah.
But what we see is this frequent breakdown, and then the explanation by the department is that it's been caused by breakdown the CETA. So I think we've got to capture that correctly, because otherwise, if we say the department depends on, it's the other way around. I don't don't know whether we understand each other.
Yes.
It's not a recommendation, it's an observation that there is a frequent breakdown on computer connectivity that a number of home affairs workers face. And then the explanation for that is that I think it has got something to do with figure service, but how we put it nicely, I don't know.
Instead, just in front of the sentence 6.4.
Yeah.
Instead, that one sentence start with the sentence that talks to the frequent breakdown in connectivity.
Mm. Yeah.
And then that sentence follows.
Yeah.
You see.
Yeah, so that the ANC can say that we are fixing the problem.
Yes.
and the department has done 1, 2, and 3. And then the other parties, then I don't know what they say, but we oppose them with whatever they say.
that is their traditional mandate. Can you just say how you have inserted that little first sentence in front?
What I'm also going to do is I'm going to separate 6.1.4 into two statements, one about CETA and one about DPW, otherwise it just becomes too complicated.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then to say that there's a frequent breakdown in connectivity at home affairs offices, and the DHEA is overly dependent on the state information technology agency for connectivity.
Yes, full stop.
And then I'll make a related.
Okay.
The second one is the DHA struggles with has ongoing issues with the establishment of offices in remote areas and independent, overly dependent on the Department of Public Works for office accommodation.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I think here we have to be careful because sometimes the problem is with public works, but sometimes it's just not being strategic ourselves. Like over the weekend, people were saying why there's no former affairs office in such a big area, Twatwa Springs. Instead, the Debiton, Twatwa Debiton, they have to go to Springs. Yeah, so we can't attribute that solely to public works. I don't know how to put it without blaming. But there is a challenge. It's a historical thing where we inherited home affairs offices, and sometimes they are not aligned with the new vision.
I think what Minister we are having here is that we have been informed that public works is an agent for accommodation and offices. If you want the offices, you get it through public works. Now, the question is, in certain areas, you ask public works that you need to open an office in Nkomas, but because then they can't find space in Nkomas, you can't have an office. Then that's why then it is attributed to public work, because you must continue to make this engagement with them, because you can't go on your own and identify a rendezvous there and convert it into an office. Then public works must say something and the lease agreement or whatever, it has to be entered by public works and the rest on behalf of home affairs. And then that's why we are saying is that because there has been this cry that yes, Home Affairs has got offices, but you have got offices in the affluent areas, in the townships, there in Sandton and the rest, but when you go outside to Bushbuck Ridge, where I come from, then you find that the office is where people are. No, people travel almost about 20 kilometers to a Home Affairs office. and then given the cues, it becomes a problem when a person sees that I'm not going to make it today. Then start thinking I'm going to spend 20 rand on a taxi to go back home and I must come tomorrow again with another 20 rand. So those kind of things is that in the rural areas like in Northern Cape, it's worse. Really, Northern Cape, there are not even bus services in Northern Cape. No bus services. People hike, actually, to go to a Home Affairs office. And they hike for 50 kilometers or even 60 kilometers in Northern Cape. It's worse. But then the question is, we know that where you are going to put a Home Affairs office, also you must ensure security. That's why public works cannot just go and put an office anywhere where they cannot guarantee some sort of security. And then some other areas, then there is not even electricity. And then to an access by public transport and all those things. But at the end of the day, that public works must assist Home Affairs to establish offices where Home Affairs wants to establish offices. They must find a way of actually dealing with that. That's why on the recommendations, we will be saying that you must pursue public works and then continue to speak to them to be able to assist you with that, because otherwise we are going to have problems of doing away with green ID books. Because if we don't have offices in those areas where people have to run miles and miles, mobile phone smart ID card, and then the queues are long, and then we will have to move to them, and then we give them the green barcoded ID book. So we are going to sustain this issuing of green ID books and prolong the issuing of ID cards, unless otherwise secured offices are found even in those rural areas. Secured, modernized, to give smart ID cards. Then we'll be sure that we can get rid of ID books, which they are actually causing us a headache in terms of fraud and everything, every day. I think that is the main reason.
Okay, and three parts of the recommendations.
Yeah. Recommendations or observations?
Yeah, observations. A significant part of the challenge is relating to DHA offensive accommodation, particularly in remote areas, relates to the limitations of responses to the work.
I think you must add availability, because in certain areas, it's not necessarily just limitations of public works on its own. It's also availability of secured accommodation.
But that's what takes a significant part. It's not the only challenge.
Yeah.
The recommendation relates to public work.
Yeah.
The availability, there's nothing much the community can do.
Okay.
In terms of recommending that there be accommodation.
Okay.
Chair, if I can just check. Let's say tomorrow public works scanned the environment and allocated offices in most of the areas where we feel are not represented, there will also be budgetary constraints in terms of staffing and relevant technology that will require, like the biometric and the training of people. So that's why I think the problem, yes, public works is a problem, but also I think also just our budget is a big problem. The budget in expanding in areas where people are concentrated. I mean, the other day I was a bit slow to the person through this week on Sunday. I said, here they go to work. It's the concentration of people. They have to go to Redbeck or go to Alexander Township. So it's public works.
Yeah, the issue, I think the issue of the budget is a general problem that I think it has got another process that we are engaging. I think there is one day that we are going to have a report back. AG will remind us where is the treasury will come here. Luckily now I think we have got treasury under a new political leadership. And then probably they will they understand our problem. Yes? No, they understand our problem. Now those that are in leadership of treasury understands our problem is his legacy, is his side. So we not. I don't think he will make us to struggle to explain the problems that we have. Luckily, Madam Buza.
Thank you very much. As much as we put our emphasis on the availability of offices by the Department of Public Works, I don't know what are we saying about the mobile offices in this budget, because I think there should be something that is done. Meanwhile, the other processes are being pursued. So in our observation, there is nothing that is reflecting to that, because I think those mobile offices, sometimes they do assist, but I know, I'm not sure about the budget part of it. Thank you, Chair.
I think one of the things that we don't talk about them is because they are being used now, and especially in Northern Cape. Northern Cape, I think they are running up and down. The only problem is that they are not giving smart ID cards. Okay. They give them all other things, and hence prolong the smart ID cards. I know of them. And that is one of the reasons as well, is that why they're using even these mobile offices is because public works cannot get accommodation where they can say, this is Home Affairs office, it opens on Wednesday. Then they come and operate there. It is not even there. There's no accommodation. They must operate in this truck. And then the third freight area, they're using the mobile truck. So it's, I think for the past year, we haven't heard about challenges on the mobile trucks, except that when we visited Northern Cape, I think they had a couple of trucks that were broken down, and we made noise about them. We made noise about them for those trucks to be repaired, to save people. And that's why generally, with many of the things, it is the budgetary problem, as the minister is saying. That's why on the 30th of May, briefed me. On the 30th of May, our meeting is with an officer of Treasury to come and respond on budget allocations for Home Affairs. Hey, we have planned that.
I had a second recommendation, observation. It's here, but it's not clearly articulated.
Okay.
The payment of suppliers within 30 days by the Department of Home Affairs is not yet adequate. I'm sure we
did
not
use the correct
word. Yeah, so I said the payment requirement of suppliers within 30 days by the Department of Home Affairs is not yet adequately met.
Not fully compliant.
And then there was an issue.
Just a second, Adam, are you with him?
Yeah, there was also an issue last year, which we raised. That was the issue of acting managers, particularly in province. Have we improved on that or not?
Yeah.
We did not ask the department to identify that was concerned, because if we had moved, then we would have to work on stability. But I don't know why it is still the status quo. I'm sure some provinces employ, but I do not know whether it's all. But now people have been acting for the for long periods. That was our question.
I think we requested some documents from the department. They did send it to you on the provincial managers. And then there was some province, one province I think they did appoint someone. I think it was Mpumalanga, it was an acting manager, and North Wales was an acting manager. And I think it's, we did request a report from the department on that.
Yeah.
And I think that we did receive a document in that effect. And then me and the AD, we may have forgotten. Muzi.
Okay. I wanted to say the department has got 9 provincial managers. Out of 9, it's Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga that do not have permanent
managers.
In KwaZulu-Natal, the post has been filled. There is a permanent manager. In the Northern Cape and here in the Western Cape and also Free State.
No.
Those are permanent, but only 3 provinces do not have permanent provincial managers.
Okay, yeah, KZN was an acting manager as well and was the longest acting manager at the time. And then Mpumalanga, we had an acting manager who is also a manager of a district in Kangala, who was doubling. And then, was it Free State? Free State, the manager, the provincial manager also was doubling with another district. Then we made noise to him when he said that when that district reports, are you reporting to yourself? And then when we left there, then I think that he said that he was going to work seriously hard that they actually get an acting district manager, so that then there is a supervision. So I think that's what I thought. We did get a report.
Chair?
Chair,
I'm not sure about the report, but I take what the learned colleague is saying in terms of those vacancies, but it's not about only managers change. If you remember very well, when the department came here, we also raised a concern about all posts that still need to be filled in Department of Home Affairs. If you remember very well, there was an issue about the front desk in all Home Affairs. Then the DG was complaining about the budget, as we have alluded to that fact.
Yeah.
But it was our main thrust was that people are complaining that they are being hanged by securities when they go to Home Affairs because there is no front desk person, just that main post of front desk. About managers in KZN, Chen. Yeah, as much as we have filled the post, but the acting manager was a woman, and she was very capable. Her name was Zandile Shandu, if you remember very well. She was very capable, but when you replaced him, when you replaced her, you replaced her with a man. That's what this department does.
Is it prohibited?
It is.
No.
Yeah, hashtag women.
It's not prohibited. But honorable members, I'll plead with you that we don't put a a recommendation that talks to employing or filling posts. My reason is that we all know that all departments, they received a moratorium from Treasury last year, January 16 or so, where there was a cap and then they were told that you don't feel any pause if somebody resigns until you are below the cap. Hence, they could not appoint anybody, even though over Tambo, then there was shortage of staff and where it was critical. Then that is the main reason why we needed to meet Treasure. Until we sort that matter of budget with Treasure, then we can't make demands for the department to fill posts, because we will be forcing them to fill posts, but on one side, they've got an instruction not to fill posts. Then those will be two contradictory instructions to one department. So we need to actually get on top of this issue of budgeting for Home Affairs. And then only when we have gone through it, then now we can ask them to continue and secure offices, to secure immigration inspectors and fill in posts and clerks and all that, and make sure that they are able to cater all the people that pitches up at their offices. Unlike now that you find one person dealing with many people and end up sending others home because they can't cater for them because they are understaffed. So that's what I would plead. We know that it has been communicated to us then that they were given caps, the budget was reduced on compensation to employees, and then they had to actually operate within that particular limit. And the only way for them to comply is not to fill the post as and when somebody resigns or is fired or suspended until the total salary bill comes below that particular cap. So we need to observe that as well and actually fight with that and remove that obstacle. Then we can now speak to the department to fill in the post.
Chair, I'm not opposed to your suggestion that we don't include it, but I do think that we could as a committee make a recommendation that the department engage with Treasury to achieve the outcome that we want. Because we recognize this is a problem for us. The fact that they put this moratorium is having an impact on service delivery. So I get the point you're making. But we can still make a recommendation that they actually raise this matter with the Treasury and point out to them the concerns of the committee. Perhaps that will strengthen their hand. Not all of the recommendations may achieve the outcome we want, but at least I think we can report it.
Okay. I think it's, as long as we recognize that moratorium, I think it is fine. In other words, it's under observation, then we just indicate that the department has got a lot of vacant posts. And then on the recommendation, then we speak on the department to continue to pursue Treasury for appropriate budgetary allocation to be able to fill the post. And then we'll do this other exercise to assist the department. Then it is fine in that way. It is fine. I hope Adam has got it now. What else? None. Let's go to the electoral commission. And then we have taken note that the IEC, of course, will be preparing for the 2019 election. Which others, I think they are waiting for it with big eyes open. hoping for a different outcome. Then 6.2.2, the IEC unqualified audit target.
Chair, open your eyes now.
Yes.
People want to talk.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Honorable Kenya. We have been informed about your late arrival. And then we have communicated that. Thank you very much. You can proceed.
Sorry, Chairperson, to interrupt, but I can see that you are moving.
to 6.2, but I'm concerned because I think, to my understanding, one of the observations we didn't touch are the issue of the banks, because we understand that the banks are not yet utilized by Home Affairs. I'm not going to talk about it because I'm thinking about the findings now. If you can't get the observation, you won't get the findings. Sorry, I won't get
the recommendations,
I'm sorry.
There's
nothing that talks to the banks here.
I need to be helped. With the banks, I think it was a... what do you call that?
Pilot.
It's a pilot project. And then, which I think is only when they have actually reached a conclusion with the pilot and have seen the benefits and the rest, then they will have to roll it out. If ever it is positive. If not, it must be scuttled there and there. Because Honorable Sope is worried about personal information as well as Figland. He's worried about people stealing personal information from the bank. And we have been promised that the lines are parallel. The bank line and the Home Affairs line, they are parallel. And they will be managed by a Home Affairs official or whatever. And then who captures information for Home Affairs. And that's what we are told. Now, but we will be waiting for the report of the pilot project, what it says. I think it's a, maybe you can insert it, that that the department has embarked on a pilot project to utilize banks for the smart ID cards as well as passports. Then in the recommendation, then we will then demand the report of the pilot project and possible rollout. Is it in order?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just, the pilot project has been going on for a year. Now, it's a report out of it. What is there that we have learned? And then, that's why I say a possible rollout, is that if it is positive, roll it out. If you think that no, it's dangerous, scuttle it. transparency.
Okay. Okay. No, I wanted to say.
No secret.
I don't know whether it's gonna change anything in terms of your summary if I say, with regard to what Honorable Mem Khalid say, the cabinet has instructed us to go through a review process with a special focus on security aspects. So the report won't just be evaluated, is to look at security aspects so that as we expand the rollout, the public is guaranteed that the information is secure and cannot be exploited. So they are not even taking our word, because as Home Affairs, that's what I said, this cyber security, yeah, they will be looking at everything, advising cabinet, then we'll come back with a report.
Okay.
So there's a process which is clearly focusing on the security of people's identities, data, because it's national data.
Yeah, I'm sure honorable members will remember that we even demanded the risk manager, ICT risk manager of Home Affairs, to come here, and they did come here, and they tried to convince us that it is secured, but we continued to hold reservations. We continue to hold reservations, and I will continue to hold reservations until we are guaranteed that people's personal data will be secured. And So if the cabinet is doing that, I think we are in line. We are in line, we'll appreciate that. And nowadays there are people that are actually selling personal information. And they are making money on that every day. Madam Bull.
Chair, thank you. I think, Chair, I'm not certain about these two. Only these are the only observations that we can highlight on the IEC, because I was just looking at our business plan report. We have good points there, which refers to the way to ensure that IEC finds ways to resolve procurement system issues. So it means there are problems on the procurement system. So in our observation, I think it has to come on the IEC per se, as well as the issue. Then we can come up with a recommendation on that. And then the other point is on the report that is required by Parliament on the Riverside Office Accommodation legal processes. Because those issues and the related disciplinary processes, those issues to me, they do affect the budget. So that could be an observation on it, and then we recommend how this the acceleration of the disciplinary processes, because they cost. You can't put people on suspension for so many years, you know. So that is what I'm saying, Chairperson. We have got good points in our business plan that talks to IEC, but here we have got only two in our report to Parliament. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. And some of the things, that's why I said right at the beginning, to say that there are other observations and recommendations that we have already made, and then they are still in force. And other things, I think they have moved to a certain extent. I'm sure even the headquarters, it's now a court issue. It's a court issue. I think they said they are going to court in June, and then to get it resolved. And then they will inform us, and we know about that. And then the procurement as well, I think is they've dealt with it.
Just try to craft one
observation and a recommendation. I think it's I think what we have been told on the procurement issues, we discussed it that day here, big time, that they must not rely on trying to explain to the Auditor General why they've done certain things. You see, I'm sure you heard them when they were saying that sometimes you find that they need extra ballot for a by-election than what they have ordered. And then and they have to take those things there and there. And then the lead period of going through the whole procurement of looking for codes or three codes and what. Sometimes it stands against delivering the elections in time and that and all of that. But we have indicated to them that because you know those kind of things will happen, you should be able to deal with them. Because you must only break the law when you don't know and things. Mara, if you know that this is the thing that makes you to actually break your own procurement system, then you can't say that you have run short of thinking to solve it. And then plan to break your own law. you can't do that. And I think it's I think on that specific one, if we can just have something to be crafted. Although is that you'll remember that on the annual report as well, we dealt with the IEC on procurement. That was the first time we heard them when the Auditor General came here as well, speaking about them. We did attend to that particular matter. Have you crafted anything?
So what I said under recommendation was the IEC is still facing challenges with the proper procurement of goods and services, and then the recommendation is the IEC need to report to Parliament on addressing its procurement challenges prior to the tabling of its annual report.
No, they must address it and fix it. And when they have fixed it, when they come and they present to us, we will ask them. Not to report. I think they need to actually deal with the procurement issues to comply with their own what do they call it?
Supply chain
management, blah blah blah. They need to comply with their own supply chain under all circumstances. Yes. And then when they come now to report, we will ask them questions, and then they will do account.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, in fact, there is a route they could follow that is asking for condemnation from Treasury. When we are faced with a problem that is urgent, that is necessary, and then we can prove that it was urgent and necessary, Then you approach Treasury, you say, we have this thing, we ask for a condonation. Mm-hmm. And because and then they give you a condonation based on the reasons you give. So some of the departments really mention some of these things, but there are mechanisms within the financial architecture of government that they could pass. Be in a position to comply, because once the Treasury gives you a condemnation, then you comply.
Yeah. But like as I said, Honourable Gumede that day, I said to them, if you know that you have got a particular challenge that you can't overcome, then they need to sit with the Auditor General. They must not wait for the audit. They sit with the Auditor General and say, these are the things that we're coming across, then we are unable. Then now, the Auditor General would actually speak to them, how would they accept it? When you do 1, 2, 3, then they'll accept it, and when they come and audit, then they'll audit on those terms. Then, like as you're saying as well, to Treasury, and then they need to be able to walk to Treasury's office and say, we have got this. Sometimes this thing comes as an emergency, and we don't have a choice of waiting. And only when they discuss with the relevant authority, then they will develop mechanisms of complying under the same circumstances. And then it doesn't become a surprise. You know, when they come and audit, then they'll say, no, we know, we have actually developed what they call it, an audit, what. They develop that. A standard or something for that particular item, and then when they come, then they will be auditing on that particular standard. You see, so the problem is that they did not do that. Then they developed arrogance. You see, and say that no, we have got no choice. They will understand us. You see, and whereas the other side as well, the auditors, they get. There is this way that is much more appropriate. They get hurt for, you see, and yes, and then now they want to deal with them, to deal with the arrogance. And then we actually find ourselves in this kind of a situation. And when they talk to each other and show the problems and whatever, then some sort of an audit standard for that particular item will be developed, and they will know, and then it's easy to comply with it, because it will be crafted for that condition, and then they'll comply. When they comply with it, then it's 100% compliance. There is no finding. at all. So they just need to actually develop those clever tactics. What else, Honorable Gumere?
On IEC?
Yes, it's still an IEC.
Yeah.
I think also, Chairperson, the issue of reputational risk to the IEC carries much, much more weight for the country. So they cannot afford to make mistakes that could gradually chip their reputation away to an extent that when I don't want to accept their results, I say, I know they are corrupt. So now reputation with them is very, very, very important, and they've got to understand them.
Yes. Okay.
On IEC Chair, I don't think it should be fair if we don't even say anything regarding those addresses that the IEC updated this committee about it. I think it's a matter of a court case, and it's an interest of the country as well.
Yeah, that's why I was saying to them that I expect a separate report on the 2016 elections, which when you come and adopt it, then it will be having specific recommendations dealing with all methods of elections that they have learned on that one. But I mean, is we can craft any other one here. And then, but what we have heard is that they are progressing very well in harvesting the addresses. But there is still about 6 million addresses that are outstanding.
Mm.
But remember that on one side, they ask for 147 million.
Yeah.
145, then they were given 71 million, which means they say that their capacity to harvest all the addresses has been limited by funding. So the only thing is that we can put anything here that the IEC is continuing with harvesting addresses of voters in line with the Constitutional Court ruling. Then the recommendation that side then we is to plead for more funding.
Chairperson, it's 6.2.3.
Okay.
6.2.3. On election days, there are political parties that continue to illegally campaign, particularly on electronic media.
Mm-hmm.
No, but what exactly is that? Do you put it on Facebook? On the desk. Huh? How do you stop it? SMS is yes. How do you WhatsApp?
I think for now.
It happens, but how do you stop it?
Give it to me and talk about
for
it.
For now, I think for now, we may not say 100% it's illegal. For now, we may not say that it is illegal. Because like the little, what do you call that? This little hat that they put on the table. Yes, the tent that they put about 500 meters from the voting station.
Mm-hmm.
It is allowed. But the fact of the matter is they still seek to influence the voter, and which is a problem. That's why campaigning is stopped, I think it's a day or two. Yeah, 2 days before. But when you allow those legal hats to be put there, then you are actually just trampling that that ban. And then again is that, again, like as we said last time, is that some of them, they speak 72 hours before the voting day, they address the mass and tell them to vote for ANC. And then that clip The TV plays it even on the morning of the voting day. The TV people, they play on the morning of the voting day.
So they are breaking the law.
Then now, yourself, you are not breaking the law. The TV makes your clip to break the law, because once they play it on the TV, you are still seen as campaigning. You see? So, I'm sure, honorable members, if you have followed the France election, you will realize that a day before the election, then there was a hack of Macron's emails and the rest, and then they were released to the media. But the day that they were released, it was in the window where that is banned. And media could not speak on it. They were banned. So there was no way that any newspaper can talk about those emails, even if they have received them as leaked from their hackers. Then they knew there is laws that prohibit that during that particular period. And hence they could not talk about that completely. So in other ways, is that in France, there is something that deals with this continuous campaigning, even on print media and TVs and the rest. We just needed to learn a little bit more. But you see, it's what the ban is supposed to be doing. The ban says all political parties and independents must campaign on the voters to understand their policies and to vote for them until a particular period. Then the voters must have a quiet period for themselves to consider and make a determination what they want to vote for without any influence of anybody. There must be that cooling period for the voter to be sober-minded, not to be bombarded with campaigning material, then to make it a well-considered decision what he votes for. But in our case, it is defeated in many ways. Yes, it is defeated in many ways, and that is the question that I think is Melder was raising. He raised with me before, and then all of us, I think we have seen it. We're receiving SMSs, even when you are in the queue to go and vote, and then your phone click click click, vote blah blah blah. You see all those kind of things. The question is that now you may say it is DA. The next election, it may be EFF. The next election, it may be the ANC. And every time when it is another party that has got an upper hand, others are crying. The issue now is, why don't we level the play field? So that we don't have one, then, it's doing one, two, three. Because the day that it is not, the balance is not favoring you, you'll cry like those in the previous day that were crying. The best thing is to level the play field and have a leveled play field that people campaign. And then when they agree that today we are stop campaigning, then we have got a lull of campaigning. Lull. We leave people to go to the bar, to drink, to sports field, to play soccer, and then stay at their houses to make parties, then thinking what they want to vote on the voting day, and leave them alone. And then have the conscious voting, you see. I need to go back. That's what you'll have. And that's what we're saying.
Yeah, Chair, I agree with you. We should just, I think, to solve the problem, just remove the word illegally. And I think where the problem lies, actually, is that the what constitutes campaigning is the issue. And the Electoral Act itself doesn't specify it. And because of that, different political parties interpret have their own interpretation of what constitutes campaigning.
Mm.
You know, some of us give T-shirts out on election day.
Yeah.
Is that campaigning or not?
Yeah.
Another IEC just they try to prohibit political rallies of some sort on election day. But generally, they don't stop you from loud hailing and handing out T-shirts and putting up posters. Because it's just how far do you want to take this principle of campaigning? You can't. You would never be able to cover every single aspect of preventing people from even communicating with each other about the election campaign. I mean, if I speak to my neighbor about who she is going to vote for on election day, that can constitute campaigning. You can't stop those kinds of things. So, I think the solution will lie in probably regulations of some sort through the Electoral Act on what exactly constitutes campaigning that all political parties will agree to, probably to the PLCs or whatever.
Mm.
So the short of it is I would suggest that on 6.2.3,
yes.
If it's an observation that political parties are campaigning on election day, then let's make that observation. But just to make the point that it's illegal, I think will be not fair. Because there isn't a law that says that it can't be done.
Currently the regulations specify a distance from the voting station where you can put a table there with your party regalias and all sorts of things, others even jumping sky high and all that, you see. So that's why I'm saying is that illegally we may need to remove. But where you give an example, it must be electronic media and print media. That's why. And print media. Because the newspaper still wakes up as well with what happened in a particular rally. And it's still the same as that particular party still continuing to campaign because they speak on their behalf but say what they said the previous day, reinforcing it. So I think that is the thing. And in any way that those regulations, I think Honorable was saying, they were meant for ordinary political parties. Unfortunately now then we have got clever political parties. Then that's why everything falls apart. Then they have to be adjusted now for the clever ones. Yes. Also, I guess now that we look at the regulations, now you actually look at little holes, and then you squeeze in that hole and say, "Yeah, we are not prohibited," and then you exploit it. I mean, if it's not prohibited, there's nothing that stops you to exploit for your own benefit. So the minute we realize that now we are becoming more clever, then the regulations then must be updated as well now to be adjusted to that cleverness. Otherwise, then the regulations become irrelevant. They don't achieve anything. Like as we're saying is that ordinarily at the time when the electoral law was actually put together, campaigning, we knew that it is rallies, people going on a rally, then addressing people, that's campaigning. But now others have shifted. Now they've gone to Facebook or WhatsApp or whatever you call them. Then, as you're saying, is that you have ENCA, you know, it's continuing to run a clip of somebody continuously. You know, it's psychologists, I think they'll tell you that if you keep on hearing that Mashile is a clever person, Mashile is a clever person, everything, you end up all knowing and agreeing that Mashile is a clever person. Yes. It gets entrenched in your mind that he's a clever person, even though that is just a slow starter, a slow learner, and whatever. So, if you have that kind of a thing going on your TV, then you end up still believing that is the right thing. All right. Let's graduate from IEC and go to the government printing web. And then, of course, is that we did speak about also to get the CEO there. The CEO there. The minister said something else, but we still want the CEO there. The minister. The acting CEO is the acting CEO. We still need the CEO. You did say something when you spoke about that. You did try and explain something, but it did not solve our problem of having a CEO, a full CEO. So we just want a full CEO. I think that is what should be understood. And then I'm sure even Honorable Gumede then spoke to ensure the governance part of it. Because we're having an entity that doesn't have a board of governors. It reports straight to the minister. The minister is almost a board of governors alone. Then it needs to have capacity itself. The CEO must have capacity. Otherwise, everything is rested on you, but you are not there every day. You see? Yes, so it becomes a bit of a problem. And so you need to have a capable CEO who is able, who has got capacity to deal with the administrative and management issues and also deal with the governance issues. Both must be strong. And then, I think that is the point that Honorable Gumede raised, that it is very key, and we agree with him. We agree with him. But we want a person that will be able to take it to that level of an SOE. Want a person that has got the governance part of it to champion that, and then the managerial side to make the necessary transition, and then manage that as well, and then. You find that, you know, all the governance issues, then they are lacking. And then what producer is busy corner and is no one SOE. But when you go inside the entity, it is not ready. So that's what we require, and that's what we will be talking to. They want to take it to there, but they are not really showing the capacity of ensuring that they will reach there being ready. No. As well, I'm a technocrat. Most of them, they are technocrats. We have one technical people that are dealing with technical issues in GPW. That's the observation that we have made. It may be wrong, but we must err on the safer side. Yes.
I think it's fair enough if we're to move speedily towards that, the governance element and leadership, especially given the responsibilities that are going on without really an accounting officer. I mean, they showed us here the huge development, although it's phase one, and I was saying, if things go wrong, we will be held accountable. And also how they were marketing their services to the continent so that they can begin to print. I mean, again, those are serious contracts across countries. So I fully agree. I think it's a fair demand for the committee that the department should ensure that we speedily move towards.
I think that is the issue. They've got a lot of infrastructure spending going on, and again they deal with, because I can say this, is that they're talking about a big, expensive, specialized machine that they are procuring. And then they say no, they have shifted procuring that machine until 2019, when the building is complete. That's where I just learned that no, there's something wrong. Because when they order it in 2019, it's going to be made and delivered in 2021. You see? So you can see that their strategic management team, it's not 100% with really strategic people. Because they should have inquired about that machine. When they order it, will it be made? And how long will it take for that machine to be commissioned and then be delivered? Whether it will only, they will only start making the machine when they have fully paid for it. They don't have that information. All what they know is that we're waiting for the building to be finished so that when we order the machine, then we'll come and put in the building. But the problem is that some of those machines, they take about a year, 18 months to 2 years to make and deliver. I'm sure the SAA will tell you, if you order a Boeing 747 or 737, you'll order it now, it gets delivered two or 3 years down the line. Therefore, now is the timing of your procurement. It becomes very important to the date that you need the thing to be commissioned. So that is the problem, is the one side of the problem. The infrastructure, it needs to be managed that you don't have corruption setting in there. And then the strategic management, it needs to be managed to provide that leadership. And then we raise something that the risk management, it has been just a by the way issue. Then they've got few people. I think they were saying it's one person with two people that are forming the risk committee. When you've got millions of rand on infrastructure, then they've got a strategic management team that they've empowered to assist them the direction they must go into Africa. But then the risk management committee is not a sizable committee to assist them. And hence now they've got some private sector security company guarding what is a national key point? It's not vetted. They don't know whether it is vetted or not. You see? So then you can see that there's a couple of things that needs to be washed out, and then it may be the problem that we may have lost some capacity at the CEO level. And that's why we are saying is, if we don't solve that, we may find ourselves not even getting to the SOE. Because you need somebody that must drive all the aspects of moving towards SOE and drive us to there. It doesn't matter.
I'm sure that they are going to start summarizing the thing and read it back to us. But I was on 6.33.
Okay.
I just wanted to reformulate 6.33 and put it as government prison works is losing artisans and skilled staff to the private sector. I know that we are saying that in these words, but I think it's better. GPW
artisans
and skilled staff to
private sector. Because of salary disparities.
Mm-hmm. 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 Because there is no money, there is division of the department.
Mm-hmm.
They are not in SOE, so
yes.
They cannot pay
for that. Yes, because of salary disparities. Done. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. 6.2.2 we must go there and rewrite that. Yeah, on the IC, I just forgot it. It just needs to be redone as an observation. Is that the IEC is planning to achieve an unqualified audit in their APP for 2017-18 and outer years, full stop. Then the inappropriate thing then comes into the recommendation where we ask them to actually change and gun for a clean audit. Yes, I've just forgotten to talk to you. Oh, what else on GPW? It's a piglet.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sitting very far from you.
Definitely. You are the farthest. When I'm okay, you are the farthest.
Thank you, Chair.
If I start beating people here, I'll beat you when I'm tired.
Okay, Chair.
Yes,
6.3.2. Yes.
Yeah.
GPW on vetting. I see on the recommendation we didn't put anything about the vetting. Because this is very important. If the securities are not vetted, and it's a very dangerous thing. So I think we should have a recommendation for that.
7.3.2, what does it mean?
No.
7.3.2.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you check 7.3.2, Honorable Figlet, on page 12, right at the end?
Oh, yeah.
You are really vigilant. Yes. Okay, you are fine now.
I'm here. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. The only thing is that we have not spoken to the security company. Because we must address the issue of the security company itself, other than the workers of... No. That security company must be specific to it.
Yeah, very important.
We must be specific to it. That specific company that is securing the national key point, we must be specific to it. I think on the
maybe we should say including the securities.
Yeah,
the security after the vetted.
No, let us not conflate it. On the observation, then we must indicate that government printing work is guarded or blah 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 by a private security company. And then now we talk to the vetting of that security company. That the GPW must ensure that that security company has been vetted to be able to guard that national key point. There's the real workers that have been employed by the GPW, because those that are working for the private company, they have not been employed by GPW. GPW employed a company. Then the company then just direct people on the street then and give them overalls there, and then they are at the gate of GPW. Then it is something else. It's a corporate. You have got a corporate vetting, unlike the other one where you have got the employees being vetted. As a corporate entity, and then is it qualified to guard the national key point? Because when you vet the corporate, then there will be conditions that they can only deploy certain people with certain qualities at GPW. Yes. Okay. Okay. Can we exhaust the GPW? Any other thing? Nothing. Then now it's going to be very difficult for us to look at the recommendations, because some of those editions of the observations we don't have. It's only Adam that's having them. The observations that we have added, because then they are going to help us to reach the recommendations. Is it a problem if we give them 5 minutes to go and print this document? Or just print the last, is the from page 10 only. Page 10. Is this, yeah, page 10 and page 11.
Sure.
As well as page 12 only. I think they should be able to do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah, let's just going to propose that let's just finish this report. Because there's nothing much more that is left. And then they can go and then we proceed the other way.
What I'm saying is that some of us, we don't have those additional observations. They are not in front of us to be able now to guide us to get the recommendations, to speak to all the observations. I was just proposing that it's advisable that they just go and print for us. They just need to print how many? 12. 12 sets of 3 pages. Am I in order, honorable members?
Mm.
Then we come and look at those pages then to actually finalize this. Yes. Okay. Honorable members, then silence means consent, I can guess. Make sure that you just read page 10, 11, and 12 only. Honorable members, I think you have received the business plan. Make a hint. Is there another thing that you wanted to add?
Yes, Chairperson.
Adam, just before you forward.
And I said that the printing is going to take place now at page 10. Now I'm worried that we don't talk, unfortunately we didn't talk about, I don't know whether when I was not here, something was said about the qualified audit opinions. Because it doesn't appear, because the reason why I'm saying that we are only concerned now about the clean audit of the IEC according to the recommendations, not speaking to the Home Affairs, because Home Affairs was a problem of the qualified audit opinions. So it is that they said last time, they want to maintain their unqualified audit opinion. So, in my view, I think that must also appear on the recommendations that they also strive for clean audit in Home Affairs, not only the IEC. Thank you, sir. Unfortunately, people
okay.
Write it down in the observations.
Okay. There's no danger, honorable members, that we include an observation on the audit opinion of Home Affairs, and still ask Home Affairs to actually achieve a clean audit. We know its problems of with the international relations and all those sorts of things. And we were informed that there is work in progress in dealing with the account of DERCO is the one that actually brings all sorts of problems, and also that account that they closed for those visitors, the deposits that they were paying, that they were supposed to get when they leave. And then when they changed the policy, then that account was having some money. But now it's Home Affairs is unable to account for what is in that account. But I think they were discussing that and how to actually deal with it, that account to finality. We know, and the, but I think it's just in include the observation of the audit opinion of Home Affairs and the recommendation for Home Affairs to strive to solve the issues relating to the findings.
I need to check that.
Yes. No, Home Affairs doesn't have a clean audit. Doesn't have a clean audit. And its problem is that account that was closed about 4 or 5 years back. But then they did not report on it, and then AG then picked it up. Then they want to know how they want them to account for what is in that thing. And it has been left for years. And also the money that comes from telco offices overseas, that sometimes just get receipts of money received, but the actual money, it grew in my account. Honorable Figlen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to see if this is correct, if I read it the way I think I understand. 7.1.2.
Yes.
The department should engage the Department of Education and SASA on birth registration, not on the enrollment.
Yes. We were told here that you have got children of foreign nationals or children that are undocumented. They are being accepted at schools without birth certificates, nothing. And SASA also, of course, is does feed them at schools. And then, but we have not given them birth certificates. And we have not confirmed their birth, that they are South African citizens. Somewhere they rely on the constitution that says anybody, South Africa belongs to everybody who live in it. You understand that? But we are actually recording the existence of people in the country. Now you've got a certain grouping of people. And then the department recognizes it's a child, must go to school, they register at the school without a birth certificate. And then social development, then spends money on these particular children. But then they've got no birth registrations. And then the thing is that others are saying, because the Department of Basic Education has registered them, then Home Affairs must give them the birth certificate, irrespective of whatever. Then we want certain things to be complied with before we issue the birth certificate. And those things, then they are not met. So that is the conundrum around Sterk's Strait and some of the border communities. And of course, I'm not saying that in inland they are not there, because there are people that have come from Zimbabwe, where you've got a Zimbabwean coming here with the wife. And then they've got children, but both of them don't have South African identity. And then they cannot go and register the child and have a citizen's birth certificate. Although it's ordinarily, they can get a birth certificate, but it will indicate that it's a non-citizen in South Africa. But then they just simply don't go there, being afraid to be locked up and all that, then they just end up having a family that is undocumented.
Sure. To address these issues, I just said that the DHH should engage with DOE and SASA on the required documentation for enrollment of children. Just so that they know what must be addressed. has some care.
Chair, I'm still not certain what is this recommendation. I'm not clear. Because what engagement? Because we need to put a proposal, but it's just generalized. And you cannot deny those children, more especially the South Africans that do not have the birth certificate, their right to get and then education. So I think we need to think about this one, Chair, appropriately.
Yeah, we're saying the recommendation is they should engage the Department of Education and Science on the enrollment of children at school. On the enrollment.
They are enrolled.
The fact of the matter is that we almost trying to say that the Department of Education must request some sort of documentation to register a child at the school. Because now the schooling, it also goes with ages. And then they may register a child without a birth certificate, they don't even know how old is the child. Because the South African law now, it says every child that is born in this country can get a birth certificate. The only difference is that somebody who is born out of parents that are not South African will get a record of birth or whatever it is called. But the birth certificate, it will say that it's a non-citizen. The question is, why are they not having it? Because it's not prohibited. Whether you've got, you are a South African citizen or not, but once you have got a child, you can still register the birth of that child and get the document. Now you're sitting with them, they don't seek this document for their birth to be recorded. But then the Department of Education also say you don't need any document to register a child at school. Social development as well says, no, you don't need any document to get a social grant. Then they make the registration of birth actually irrelevant until the child reaches, they call it grade seven, and then the child needs an ID now to write matric. I mean, standard, whatever. On grade 12, they need to write matric. They need an ID. They don't have an ID, then they drop off. Then they are on the street. So those are the kind of the things that we are saying that is happening to actually talk to them that you must need some sort of documentation. This will encourage everybody else to go and record the birth of their children. Because nobody's prohibited. Every Tom, Dick and Harry, once you've got a child in South Africa, then you can register that birth.
No, I understand you, Robert.
Yes.
I think we need to also advise the department, because this may be interpreted in a manner that would reflect that we are saying they must not provide. So that's why I'm saying I'm very skeptical about the way we have put it. Mm. And I think in our recommendation, we also need to put the issue of intensifying their outreach to the communities, that so that they can understand that they have a responsibility to ensure that children do have a certificate. So there should be another recommendation that you put there.
7.1.1, have you seen it?
7.1.1.
Mm. 7.1.1.
Okay. Alright, no, it's fine, check. So, but I'm not happy about the way it is put up. Let's continue, maybe in a debate,
We are not saying that they must refuse children to be registered at school. And also we are not saying that SASA must refuse to give children food and personal diet. But we are saying that Department of Home Affairs, in its efforts to make sure that everybody else is documented, they must engage these two. Because we expect that if you know in the past, then when you are to about to go and work you get a standard 6, the parents expect that now you are going to work. Then they know at work they will need a dump pass. They will actually make sure that even before you write an exam of standard 6, Bayokbalisa will tell you a dump pass. Because it is required in France. So now we are saying here as well is that if parents know that when they go and register their child, there is a birth certificate that will be required, then there will be more movement of documenting children. You see? And then if children then, for some reason, pitch up in January without a birth certificate, may still be accepted, but the Department of Education must talk to a time frame. If they've registered a child at grade R without a birth certificate or whatever, it may give the parents and say, by the time it gets to grade 2 or grade 3, you should have got this birth certificate. So that at least then you have got a programmatic requirement that by the time the child reaches grade 12, must be having all the documents that are required. At the moment, they reach grade 12 without an ID or a birth certificate, and then they drop out, they don't write an exam. After so many years of schooling, and then the poor child then now get on the street, then it's a hobo, steals everybody's things. But when you go to the child's mind, you can see that the child is intelligent, but it's prohibited from proceeding because somebody just did not get an ID book. So that, I think that it's just an effort to try to move in that direction, Muzi.
Yeah, Chair, on that very same point, I also wanted to add on issues like the foreign students in terms of documentation and requirements, because that is where the department is litigated against. Mm-hmm. on the very same issue of basic education, where schools are refusing to register foreign kids. So I don't know how the committee will have to recommend that, but it's also opening the department to litigation.
No, it's fine. I think we'll deal with that when we have got more clarity on it, on that particular litigation and which schools and which area, and again, is what is the outcome. And then we'll make a well-considered recommendation. Honorable Hussein?
Chair, just two or three quick points. I'm sorry if I missed this 6.1. Now what's happening here? This is a different question. 7.1.
6.1.1.
No, 7.1.1.
7.1.1.
Yeah, that's just a simple language problem there. I think
yes.
It's a bit ambiguous. You're not sure whether you're asking the department to attend to the outreach program within 30 days or registration of birth within 30 days. If you read it, you understand. It just needs to change that language a bit.
Yeah, I think they just did not do it. I think after 30 days, I think I did insert 30 days within the date of birth.
No, if you read it,
yes.
It says the DHA should conduct more outreach programs
on
the registration of births within 30 days.
Within 30 days.
Now we understand what that
of
means.
Birth.
The registration of births within 30 days is a project, ne?
Yes.
And we are asking them to conduct more outreach programs. If you read it the way it is, are we asking them to do the outreach programs within 30 days or the registration of births within 30 days?
No, it's
a... You see, it's just a language problem. It's not a good thing. We can change that. Adam is a... Yeah. Is
I
master
think,
of
I
that.
Think you said within 30 days.
But the big issue that I want to raise, Chair, is I agree with everything that's been said on that matter around the registration of birth. But while we're on this topic, I think we must please also make some mention about our inability to register children at the hospitals because of insufficient staff there an inoperable system.
Treatment.
The equipment, there are some problems there. We need, I think we should make some recommendations on that. And then just the last point, Chair, and especially since the Minister is here, I'd like to just share just one thought on this. It, you know, every mother that goes to a state institution gives birth to a child, the hospital has got their contact details. It's got the telephone number for the mother. Now, if we can send an SMS to you to say, come and fetch your smart ID, I don't know why we don't also send an SMS to say your child is not registered. We can have that record. It's not impossible to do it. So putting up posters in the hospitals, and we've been doing that for years, and I think you need a little bit more attention towards these things. I also recognize that sometimes that there are parents who don't register their children for cultural reasons so shortly at the hospital because they don't have a name and so on.
Yeah.
But if we've got those details of those parents, I think that there's much more we can do in terms of actual outreach to them. So it's good enough to put up posters, but sometimes you're preaching to the wrong person. You want to target the individual who hasn't registered their child, and it's not an impossible task for us to do that. So I just thought I'll share that thoughts with the Minister, maybe when she has an opportunity to deal with it and with officials.
Okay. Hey, you know, there's a myriad of problems when you get there. You know, it's some other people, you know, they just get moved from the village, and then they just hire a buggy and take the lady to the hospital, and get to the hospital and then deliver the child. And then when they want the ID, just doesn't have the ID there and there. And then she has been picked up about 30 kilometers from the hospital by somebody. They just walked on the street and then they stopped any buggy that is there, pick the lady, hospital, give birth, then ID, nobody that can go back and pick it up. All that, and then she delivers a bouncing child, very healthy. And then the next day she's discharged. Nobody can bring their ID book, and especially the poor people. You know, it's, they may even send somebody, they phone somebody there. They look for the ID, they don't find it. It is under the mattress or somewhere in some other corner. They don't get it. There are quite a good number of things that happen. I think it is appropriate, of course, is that the department must use all sorts of platforms that are available, including internet facilities or
social
media and. Of course, is that we must continue to put the pamphlets at the clinic where they visit, you know, for 3, 4, 5 months before their actual day of delivery. They visit for management of the pregnancy. If those pamphlets are there in big and bold letters, they mustn't go and search for the pamphlets on the wall. The pamphlet must speak to them when they walk into that hall at the clinic. You know, you must make the pamphlet to speak to them. And then, and also, of course, is that, like last time, I don't know how possible it is, Minister, we have said that if it is possible to actually even train or provide some training for clinic staff, that when they address this prospective mothers, because they do have some interactions with them on certain days when they come, and then they counsel them and do that, and then that can be part of it, and then they get trained on that little pamphlet and advise the mothers to be that on the day of your delivery, and then try by all means to have your ID, and then blah, 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 and have your cell number of somebody, so that what Hussein is saying can be implemented. And then, but there is a myriad of problems that arises on a daily basis with 56 million people. That's a lot of problems. And then, Mekenya.
I think, Sebastian,
as we move towards this issue you're talking about, I also want, maybe we are missing a point here. When you are talking about deliveries, we thought about all the hospitals. Now I'm glad that you're talking about the clinics, but though you're talking about the antenatal clinic. Now what I was, yes, I'm glad that you're talking now about the clinics, but not only about the antenatal, but because also there are deliveries in the clinics, especially that
yeah.
we have as a government, this NHI, which talks to re-engineering of private health care, because it doesn't mean that all the mothers are going to deliver in hospital. So also must include what Honourable Hussein has just said, but also include the clinics, because that can also, the registration can also be done in the clinics. Where
okay. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's as long as information is captured, or the mothers-to-be, they have got adequate information that on their day of delivery, they must come with. But in any way, they've got the clinic card. The clinic card is supposed to be having personal data. The only thing we may not know that it has got a cell phone number or something, but the ID number of the mother should be there on a clinic card. The name and an ID number. They're supposed to be on the clinic card. So what is just left is that the cell number or something like that, they must be advised to have a cell number of contact, so that when by mistake, then she has delivered and gone home without registering the child, then they can contact her over there. Of course, it's going to be very difficult for Home Affairs to man all hospitals, as well as all, what is that category, clinics, it's comprehensive health facilities. Is the intermediate of between clinic and hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then to man all of them, that everyone there will be there will be a Home Affairs official, because even the current hospitals that we know, I think we don't have personnel on all of them. We don't have equipment on all of them. They are not having internet connections. Although that majority, I think, we use laptops and whatever, 3G and all that. But we would encourage the department to improve, to explore that, of the 3G laptop thing, to make sure that they register these children. Are you still with us?
Yes. Okay.
Now we've got this document. Is everybody having this 2 pages document? So we can close what we have been looking at and concentrate only on those 2 page documents. Yeah, take us through.
So the changes in terms of observations start from 6.1.4, which is changed. There we said there's a frequent breakdown in connectivity affecting service delivery at Home Affairs offices. That was added.
Yes.
And then the VHA contains the state information technology agency connectivity
offices.
Then 6.1.5. A significant part of the challenges related to today's DHA office accommodation, particularly in remote areas, relates to the limitations of the Department of Public Works, as well as budgetary constraints.
Okay.
Then 6.1.6 stays the same. 6.1.7, the payment requirement to suppliers within 30 days by the DHA is not yet fully compliant. That's a change, adaptation. 6.1.8, the White Paper on International Migration needs engagement on an intergovernmental and regional level to facilitate its implementation. 6.1.9, there has been a negative impact on the service delivery by the DHA due to the Treasury moratorium on filling of vacancies. 6.1.10, the DHA has piloted a project of partnering with banks for the delivery of passports and IDs. And 6.1.11, the DHA is not...
Is it not smart ID cards?
Okay.
Is it both? Is it including smart ID cards only? Not green ID booths.
Okay, I've got that.
Okay.
And then 6.1.11, the DHA has not set a clean audit on its annual as an annual target. Then the IEC, only 6.2 changes there. The IEC has planned for an unqualified audit target in the APP for 2017-18 and the outer years.
Yes.
6.2.3, on the election day, there are political parties that continue to campaign, particularly on electronic and print media. The IEC is still facing challenges with the proper procurement of goods and services. The IEC is making progress on gathering of addresses on the voters' roll despite being significantly underfunded. The GPW has planned to maintain an unqualified audit opinion for 2017-18 and the outer years. The GPW facility is a national key point and security guards protecting its property have not been vetted. GPW is losing artisans and skilled staff to the private sector due to salary disparities. 6.5 then changes. The staff, no, that actually doesn't change, then 6.6 is changed there. The GPW is yet to appoint a full-time new CEO.
Okay.
Then we go to recommendations. Number one.
Wait. Don't run fast. Hold on there.
Okay.
You have made notes, honorable members. Is there anything that has been jumped? Honorable Hussein says not. He says no. Then honorable Mkhadibi says no. Honorable Gumede says no. Okay. We can move now to the recommendation. Honorable Minister. No. This is the current situation. The current situation does never board. You are a board. Currently you are a board. And then you just need the assistance of that CEO. That's what we are speaking to. And then when we move now to SOE, then other things will start unfolding. Okay. Is there anyone that wants to say anything on what we have dealt with? Honorable Kashadia?
No.
You are accommodated?
Yes.
Or is it Dambuz?
I think most of the things have been inserted in this report.
Yeah.
But there was a question that was raised by Honorable Comendi on the repetition, on the risk part of it. I don't know whether it has been captured, but I don't see it.
On what?
Reputation risk. That was
raised by one other person. Oh, that's what, I think it was just a comment.
Oh.
That the IEC depends on its reputation for its results to be accepted, and they must always guard that it is not tampered with.
All right.
So that is the thing that actually makes IEC alive, integrity and its reputation. You are actually explaining why there is a need for them to sort out this thing of procurement. That was actually frustrating them. Thank you very much. And now, can we then make sure that the recommendations assist us to move forward? Adam?
7.1 there. I changed something after the document was emailed to include something that Jefferson said. So I say there, the DHA should conduct more outreach programs, such as posters at health facilities, training clinic staff, and seeking out contact details of parents to promote the registration of births within 30 days. So we're just giving them a list of recommendations, also to clarify the ambiguity that Honorable Hussein mentioned.
But you still miss something.
Which is?
within 30 days of birth. That's the project that we are trying to do. Otherwise, if we just simply say within 30 days, that means the department must do this outreach in 30 days. Within 30 days of birth, then becomes a project that we are saying that all mothers must say.
Okay. 7.2. That one also changed slightly from since it's been printed to address Honourable Dambuza's concerns. But I've said that the DHA should engage the Department of Education and SASA on the documentation for enrollment of children at schools and granting of support grants, respectively. I said I took away the required, or because it implies that you require documents, but you're not. It's more that they must engage with them that they ensure that there's documentation for children if necessary.
It happened even last week. I'm not sure whether we are being targeted.
They
are not EFF
Honorable members, I was just saying, we just have to be clear about what I was saying to the Department of Education and the Department of Social Development. It's really our problem. If we had mobile facilities, we could target schools, we could do far more, because on their part, their policy is clear. Each and every child who is on the South African soil should be at school. Each and every child who is on the South African soil qualifies for
a
grant of some kind, if a child is vulnerable. So,
yeah, I think just a second, Adam. That's why, Minister, we are saying you should engage his department. Now, we are removing that word that is said required. That word should not be there. It's just on the documentation for enrollment of children at schools and granting of child support grants, respectively. You engage his department. And then, so that they are clear, because it does not see the Department of Basic Education when the child reaches grade 12, the child can't write the exam because doesn't have an ID document. Again, that our grant system as well currently goes to 18 years. But if the child doesn't have a birth certificate or an ID document, when do you determine that the child has reached 18 years or not? It becomes a problem. It becomes a problem. So the engagement is to actually to conscientize each other. Because, like as I'm saying, is that we knew that schools were actually been calling Home Affairs to come to the school because there is a band of children to be registered for ID. And then the Home Affairs sent an official to the school. Then with fingerprints, they go and take those children. And then they come and then they even go and give them their ID to go to school. As long as the consciousness has been raised of this, the Department of Education, then they will actually be able to. That's why we are saying it's not required. Remove that, because once you say it's a required document, that means if they don't have them, they can't register the children and something that they may not agree. But if you engage them, you raise their understanding that it is important that these children must have documents. And then whether it is for SASA or for education, because at one stage, that certificate will be required to determine something else, whether the child writes an exam in Matric or not, whether the child exits the grant system or not. You'll require these documents from Home Affairs. But if we render these documents completely irrelevant, then somebody may find being on the grant system, being at the age of 24 years, not getting job, and continuing and claim to be 17 years. And you can see that this is 24. He says, no, I'm 17, I don't have a birth certificate. And then it becomes a conundrum. So we are just simply saying that the Department of Home Affairs should engage these two groups and raise their conscious level about this document and the importance of this document to them as well. But when they do that, they will also be assisting Home Affairs to get almost everybody documented. You see. I know it is a difficult thing, but we just need to actually take it by the horns, because we have got an experience that at steps raised, there is this problem. It has been raised to the highest level. And some of fundices and all that, they have taken it into themselves as that they want to actually sort it out. And Lawyers for Human Rights are also engaged there. That's why I said to the DG that we may need to visit that area, and the day we go there, we must also be having a mobile unit then to assist those that may need to be assisted while we actually sort out the root causes of children not being documented in that area.
Chair,
yes.
I think Minister is quite correct to say we may even add the issue of the mobile clinics. We know that, these mobile offices, we do know that there are still challenges in some other areas. Because I'm skeptical of this. It might be exploited, the interpretation of this. It might be exploited, more especially in the rural areas. You don't know, our people, how they are, the things that are exposed to by those officials in the rural areas. So I think somebody may misinterpret this. For me, I really have a problem, though I don't know how could we rewrite this, rephrase this comment, but I'm worried.
But the implementation agent is the Department of Home Affairs, and the Minister of Home Affairs is here. And when you complete this recommendation goes to the Department of Home Affairs, and then they should be knowing that it is not for public consumption. Is for the minister to know exactly what is the thing that we're talking about. And then they go there, and then the engagement is actually between Home Affairs and education.
No, he's a big to us.
Yeah?
I think if I can address the issue that's raised by Honorable Dabul and the Minister, the DHA, I'm just going to add a word there, the DHA should engage the Department of Education and SASA on assisting with the documentation for enrollment of children. So adding the word assisting with the documentation for enrollment of children. Basically, just saying Home Affairs is saying this is what our service do, this is how we can help you, rather than saying that, you know, you need documents and documents are required.
Adam,
yeah.
Let's also remove its enrollment. Remove enrollment, then remove granting. Then it says the DHA should engage the Department of Education and SAS on the documentation of children at schools and for child support grants. Finish. So that it doesn't look like the condition is for enrollment. Or it is for granting. Does it make life a little bit easier than
we?
Yeah? And for child support grant, respectively. Does it remove the smoke? Henda, I thought that Dambuda was going to say yes or not yet.
I don't know, it's fine, Chair.
Okay.
It's a work in progress, Chair.
Okay.
We'll get the challenges, then we'll address the challenges.
Yes.
7.1.3? The DHS should be given consideration for an exemption from using CETA by DBSA. Then they all remain the same until we go to 7.1.7, where the approved migration white paper must be engaged on an international and regional level to provide a policy framework for the drafting of new immigration and refugee legislation. 7.1.8, given the broad scope of its services and the impact on service delivery, the DHA needs to continue to engage Treasury on exemptions from the moratorium on filling of vacancies. And 7.1.9, the DHA should strive towards a clean audit.
Okay.
Or maybe perhaps in its plans.
Let's hear the minister.
Yes. 7.1.3, the DHA should be given consideration for an exemption from using CETA.
Mm.
Why by DPSA? Mm. Because now CETA is under telecom.
Yeah.
Even then, it's only cabinet who can allow for that deviation. I know.
Just remove that last part.
Yeah.
By DPSA, just remove it and leave the full stop.
Okay.
From using CETA. End of story. Everybody's happy. Yes.
Mm.
Okay.
Electoral Commission. 7.3 changes. The IEC should consider amending legislation to include repercussions and improve the definition of campaigning done on voting days, particularly through various media.
Okay.
The IEC need to address its procurement challenges prior to the tabling of its annual report. The IEC should be allocated sufficient funding to complete the gathering of addresses on the voters' roll prior to the court-appointed date of the next election.
Okay.
And,
those are the areas that we change.
I want to add a point that says ANC must stop busting people during by-election.
They must tell us tomorrow.
Okay, it's the next APC.
And then on the recommendations, only for GBW, only number 2 changed. We said that GPW should vet all personnel who work at its premises. And then 7.3.5.
Before that, Chairperson, I think this sentence should be replaced. Why don't we remove the vet? GPW should vet all personnel who work at its premises are vetted. Why don't we remove that vet to say GPW should see to it that all personnel who work at its premises are vetted? Since we still love it, love it all.
Mm-hmm.
The first
because we are saying that the last 2 ways are vetted.
No,
we delete them.
I don't delete
when
them.
When you read without them, does it make sense?
We can delete them.
Can delete them. The
last 2.
Last 2.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can also
we
remove.
We have done so now.
Yeah.
GPW should vet all personnel who work at its premises.
Full stop.
But sir, how do they address the issue of that security if it is not clear? Because you cannot vet unless, I don't know.
I think they should have added it somewhere.
Yeah.
If not, it will have to be added. Because we have made noise enough, it's either Adam did not want to raise more or so. Or the implementation of that recommendation is going to be difficult. You must just add another sentence that talks to that security company. So that even yourself, then you say 7.3, GPW has sorted it out. That is what is within their mandate. It's going to be a continuous work. But that one of the security company is going to be a one-off. And then, so that you are able to say this recommendation has been complied with. Can you proceed?
Okay, there's only 7.6 changes. And that indicates the GPW must appoint a suitable CEO as a matter of urgency to make the transition to a well-governed state-owned company.
Then 7.3.7, then it is the security company. GPW should ensure that the security company guarding its premises is better.
Oh, I just added it as a... As a sub-clause to 7.3.2, it says, should vet all personnel who work at his premises, particularly private security.
No, don't combine them, Adam. Don't combine
them.
Who is separate? That's one of the security companies. Stick it right in the hand.
I'm going to stick it underneath that one because it's related to that same recommendation.
Yes, it's been said that there is fine. And then after this exercise, honorable members, is there anyone that is still having something problematic? After all is that we're going to rely on Adam and Abby to ensure that the rest of the document starting from paragraph 1 until to paragraph 5. And then the language is clean, the texts are clean, where there should be a full stop, there's a full stop, where there's a comma, should be a comma. Before they enter the table, it's around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. And make sure that it appears on the HEC by tomorrow morning. And then, of course, is that there are certain areas where you have got double full stop on one sentence. I think the AD will deal with that, with Adam. And where you have got numbers, then make sure that the numbers are copied correctly. And then we have not missed other digits. Because then you would have undermined us big time. I spoke with this thing off. Yeah. Well, I just want to repeat what I've said is that, so honorable members, is that what after we have done what we have done here, then is there anything that you are still worried about? And then, of course, like as I've said, is that some of the resolutions is just repetition of resolutions that we have taken either in quarterly reports and some on specific reports, and those recommendations they still hold. You can still pursue the department to look at those and report on them. And then I'm requesting the drafters here, the committee secretary and Adam to ensure that all the figures that are in this document on the main body of the report are correct. And then all sentences and words are checked correctly. And the punctuation to ensure that the report is fine and then it is ready to be tabled by 2-3 o'clock. Okay? Are we done on this, honorable members?
Yeah.
Anybody who moves for it to be adopted? Who is happy? I'll see a hand rising and say, I move for adoption. Merapudi?
Yeah, I'm moving for the adoption of this report. Check, thank you.
Thank you, with the amendment. Honorable Dambuja?
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the report with amendment.
Okay, the document has been seconded for adoption. Anybody who has got a different view?
We'll talk tomorrow.
Thank you. No, has got a mandate, party mandate. So if the Pigland has got a party mandate, must be allowed to express that party mandate. This thing of speaking with conscience, it is just a bluffing word. You know. We have got party mandate. Mm-hmm. Yes, Pigland.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We reserve our right. We're still going to discuss this in our caucus. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You've got a right to do so. Some of our brothers and sisters have died for that right. Yeah. You can exercise.
So I must exercise.
Yes, and then
we'll articulate our position tomorrow as the AFF.
No. We're talking about the report. The content, then you can make as much noise as you like.
Chair, please.
In the
tomorrow.
Yes.
You'll hear us tomorrow.
No, it is fine.
Something to say.
It is fine.
Today, we have got nothing to say.
I thought that you were going to say that you reserve your position or you object or you do what.
You'll hear me tomorrow.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you for adopting the report, and then I think the secretaries will deal with it, and then I'll sign the document on your behalf. Honorable members, now we have got the business plan in front of us. Can you just quickly go through it? Remember that on the business plan is the trip to Germany.
I'm fine.
And then if you go away, then the committee may remove your name.
I'm not here.
A possibility. The recommendation here. Hold. I'm just simply being honest.
Listen, Chair. Chair, the committee does not have a right to dictate on EFF. I'm here protected by the rules of Parliament.
On the committee.
Don't tell me. Don't intimidate me. I'm
right.
Clear.
The business plan is the committee.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Let's look at the business plan. Adam, can you take us through that, that document?
Okay, honourable members, I don't want to waste any too much of your time. The plan remains largely the same as the previous years. It's the same template. We'll all still be familiar with the vision, mission, and values of Parliament, which remain unchanged, as well as this mandate. The strategic goals of Parliament haven't changed.
I hope I could get the attention of Honourable Kumede, because the minister has already been excused to leave, so she's no longer in the house. Let's proceed.
So the strategic goals of Parliament haven't changed as well. What has changed from page 2 is the situational analysis of what's happening in the context that we're making the annual performance plan in. Particularly, 6.1 remains the same in terms of the NDP targets, but as well as the medium-term strategic framework. However, the State of the Nation address has highlighted some aspects which have changed from previous years, which inform our plan. These, on page 3 onwards, indicate that the establishment of Invest SA, which aims to strengthen the relationship between government and the private sector, is also meant to reduce regulatory burdens and for local and foreign investors. The President stated that the country should make it easy to do business in South Africa, including as it relates to the provision of visas, which we'll bear in mind in our plan. The Operation Bakisa uses big, fast results methodology, launched in 2014. Tourism was identified as a key job driver in South Africa, and that there was a targeted increase for tourist numbers, which Home Affairs assists with. And the national fight against corruption continues and facilitated both internally and through the provision of documents by the DHA. Then we've got listed there verbatim from our budget review and recommendation report. Our recommendations. Again, I won't go through those with you. We've just recently dealt with it. But basically, we've just included these recommendations in our annual plan so that we bear them in mind. We have been given the indication that the government printers bill will be coming to us, as well as the security printing bill, the second bill, which may come later in the year. So those are the three. And then the refugee and BMA bill might come back to us in terms of the legislative proposal or legislative program. Then on point seven there is basically just these are the targets of Parliament's strategic plan that relates to committees. And there are five of them, which you'll see in the last couple of pages. The first is refining and implementing the oversight and accountability model to ensure that the executive implements the objectives of the medium-term strategic framework by 2019. Second of which is to develop and implement a legislative model to ensure enhanced quality of support, advice, and lawmaking. Thirdly, to develop and implement a cooperative government mechanism to ensure enhanced coordination of programs of government by 2019. 3.1, there is increased access of quality of participation in processes of parliament through enhanced programs to ensure participatory democracy. And lastly, enhanced parliamentary international engagement by increasing the percentage of reports considered on parliamentary international relations engagements. So now what you'll see those translated into is on the following pages on the table is outcome 1 on page 1, outcome 2, 3, and 4 on the following pages. So outcome 1, then in turn...
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
I'm going to write the point 7, 2.3. When we are saying it must be refined, that oversight and accountability model, whose responsibility? Is it not Parliament that is responsible for that? And then now we just implement... We ensure that we implement in natural oversight and accountability model. 2.3. So that refined, is it?
2.3.
Under 7.
Yes.
Is it correct?
I think this is just extracted as is.
Mm. Yeah, this is extracted from the Parliament's strategic plan, which guides all the work of committees. So basically the role for our committee would be to gradually improve the way that we do oversight and accountability. So there is a model, but we're basically trying to improve each year by refining our oversight according to the plan.
Okay.
So that is what Parliament intends to do.
Yeah.
Then, but it can only do it through its committees. Then what are the committees doing to actually implement that?
Why can't you say
then ours then is in the white columns on the right hand side of it.
Yeah, would we change
to respond to it as a plan? Because you see the other thing is that we can't set our own objectives that are different from what Parliament wants to achieve.
No, I agree, Chair, but refining of the document per se. It should be done by Parliament when we are raising challenges. So that for us to put that refined is a problem.
Yeah, so the implement is what relates to it.
Yeah.
So we all the stuff that we've got here is actually more about the implementation, but we just state the target as it's stated in the...
We can just strengthen or intensify that whatever, because that is our action now.
There's no harm in taking out the refine and implement. Still, we take it as a similar target.
No. If you take refine out, then it is no longer the same objective that Parliament has. That would be a problem. So what is happening is that the refined part is that a particular committee of Parliament has done that, produced that. And then ourselves on this objective, we are on the implementation and oversight and accountability. Hence we respond on those ones. But at the end of the day as well, there is nothing that stops us from recommending back if we think that these objectives is not correct or they are not right, and then for Parliament to refine it with proposals from us. But at the moment is that they are there, agreed, adopted by Parliament, and then its committees then must implement them. then must show how you are implementing them. And then that is now what we are doing on all the four columns on the right of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'll continue. So the indicators there are the main work of the committee. The main activities that we engage in then go in the following in the following columns. The deliverables are how we measure those activities that we do. The baseline is what has happened in previous years and what are we measuring ourselves against. And then we divide each of those activities into the four quarters for different actions. So I think I'll just go into the indicators because the activities and deliverables relate more to what the administrators do to make sure that we can prove what the committee has done. So so we oversee the programs and initiatives of the DHA and IEC and GPW. So the activities relate there mostly to the quarterly performance reports that we make. The committee meetings attended and the minutes adopted. We struggle with the minutes adopting of minutes, but they are required. So we'll get back on track with that. The planning and budgeting tool for committee. So this is what we're doing now: the annual oversight plan and our budget, which is done by the administrators. The portfolio committee report on the strategic plan and budget vote, which we also have done today. The committee report on the quarterly performance of departments.
Just a second, let's hear Honorable Dambuza.
Thank you, Chair. On item number 9, I fully agree with the...
Where?
On the activities.
On the same page? Where we have got the refined thing?
No, we have passed that now. Can I get an answer?
No.
I'm getting insurance.
On the... Last but one.
Page five, isn't it? Are we not there?
Yes.
We are there. So we are saying 9 provinces visited per 5 year cycle.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem on that. And then we are saying at least 2 provinces visited per year. No, I wanted to check. Can we add to say and whenever there is a need, because sometimes there are emergency issues that they will need us to go. So they may say, this is not in our plan. So I don't know. Just to add that.
And when there is a need, not as
when
needed.
And then we'll see.
And when there is a need.
Mm.
But I've just realized that we don't have targets.
Yeah.
The particular target for this one.
Because I'm just saying on the whole page. Because the deliverables is what comes out at the end. It's not necessarily a target. And the indicator is just a thing that says you are doing this. It's not measuring the quantum of those things that must be completed. You see? I think that is the one thing that we may need to.
The actual
target
today,
because the target, there is this smart thing that must be measurable, realistic, and blah 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 blah, and achievable, and all that. Mekeny, did you want to say something?
No, listen.
You're all right.
I'm okay.
Yes. Okay.
So, the way I understand it is that the quarterly segments, they are actually the targets. So we've broken those down to 14 targets. So for instance, on the one that Luther has raised, are the 9 provinces for the cycle. The third quarter, there's the Western Cape oversight, and then the fourth quarter, so second and third, and then the Limpopo is quarter 4. That's just according to how we've worked in the past 5 years, which provinces we've covered, and these are the two outstanding ones. Western Cape will be the last, and then we're starting again with Limpopo. These things often fall away because of our legislative requirements. We're falling a little bit behind because of the legislation. But these are the targets, and then we just, when we report, we say we didn't achieve those because of legislation.
Okay. Okay.
The target below that is committee reports on oversight visits. So that's just, again, one report per visit. The committee reports on annual performance, which we deal with the department, which is in the third quarter, the target there. And the committee BRRR report, which we're familiar with, also directly after the annual report. Improved stakeholder engagement. So we've got two indicators or activities related to increased stakeholder engagement. Eight provincial DHA managers engaged. So the target there depends on which provinces we visit. So the provinces that we visit, we don't get them to come and report to us each year. So it will be either seven or eight provinces, depending on how many oversight trips we do. So we just try to get all the rest of the managers that we haven't visited to come and report to us once a year to get in touch with the provincial issues. And then we attend and participate in one workshop at least a year, which some members have already done, the migration policy workshop. We're already kind of halfway through the first quarter. So then committee minutes made available to the public. So that's more on the administrative side, but once the committee has adopted them, we make them available. And then oversight, oversee programs. So basically this is just our quarterly plans for the committee. So every quarter we come up with our activities, which members will be familiar with. And then moving on to page six. The development and implementation of a legislative model to ensure enhanced quality of lawmaking, which is also related to improved oversight. I've just realized that the headings need to be stopped around there. The outcome one is improved oversight, and outcome two is improved legislation. But that's just an administrative thing. That's just a technical thing. Yeah, I'm just looking to fix that before I forget. Okay, so the various indicators there are draft bills submitted to the House of the NCOP, a written submission list on the advertised bills and committee reports and public hearings, committee reports on the bill, adverts, flyers and posters, written submission list on advertised bills, committee reports on public hearings and oversight activities, and committee reports on referred petitions. So this again is subject obviously to the submission of those bills by the committee. We've already dealt with the last bit of the refugee bill this quarter, and then in the third quarter potentially the government printers bill, according to the GPW plan, if they stick to their targets. And then improved public participation has got two indicators there. A joint meeting with other committees, which we already have in previous years done with the Select Committee on Social Services. There's a secondary indicator there to a procedure followed on the processing of referred activities. That depends on if we're required to appoint a commissioner for the IEC usually, but we've done that in the past, but there shouldn't be a need for this year. Then moving on to the last page, the broadened outcome there is the broadened intergovernmental oversight and engagement. This is done by improving the strategic objective of participation in processes of Parliament through enhanced programs. So the indicator of improved public participation has two activities. Public meetings, which we arrange when we do oversight trips to the provinces. We have one, this committee has initiated a process where we try and have a public meeting. We're not just meeting with officials when we do oversight trips, which we've done in the Northern Cape before. And then proactively inviting non-governmental academic stakeholders to present to the committee each year, so we make sure that we get broader information, usually towards the latter part of the year, once we've gotten rid of more of our administrative requirements. And then lastly, this relates to both outcome one and outcome two. improved laws and improved oversight through international engagement and strategic objectives. And that relates to the indicator of effective participation in international relations and cooperation. And the target there is usually one international study tour per 5-year cycle. And the study tour report needs to be provided within 10 days. The baseline was a 2012 study tour to Russia, and this quarter the study tour to Germany, which is almost finally approved. I mean, it's still pending the last and final approval, but it should, all things going well, proceed. So this is an overview of our plan.
Okay, honorable members, there is a document in front of you. And it just maps up what we will try to follow. But on a quarterly basis, then you will be having a detailed program. Okay? And which says what now? Can you open it, Eddie? Can you open it? While honorable members are processing what they've just had. So honorable Sigland is going to comment through the cell phone. The cell phone is just going to comment now. He's tired of speaking. Honorable members, next week, Tuesday, what are we doing, Eddie?
Next week, Tuesday, we are going to...
The date is?
The 23rd of May.
23rd of May?
Yeah, we're receiving briefing by the department on the fourth quarter. That's your performance and budget.
Okay.
And then on the 30th, and then is the DG of National Treasury on the funding pressure for the Department of Home Affairs.
Okay.
And then on the 6th of June is briefing by CETA and the Department of Home Affairs on the progress made on the network problems expressed by DHA.
Yeah.
So this is a follow-up from the meeting we had last year on 6th September. With telecommunication and data.
Right.
Then 13 June, briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on the first quarter performance for 2017-2018 financial year. And then
that will be the last
meeting. And then if everything goes well,
17th
we go to Germany. From the 17th of June until the 24th of June coming back. That will be the remainder of our program.
Okay. Honorable members, and I'm aware that on the 3rd of June, Lesotho is holding national elections. Okay. But because we are engaged in budget votes, I'm not sure whether our parliament is going to send people, but I think there is some level of obligation in terms of the certain parliamentary forum. The only thing is that usually when that happens, our parliament is expected to send a bigger contingent to make up for countries that are far, like Mauritius and all that. But now that we are engaged with these budget votes, I'm not sure how our parliament is going to try to respond to that. And then we will be hearing as we move on what's going to happen. But like as I said last time, I tried to plead with the House Chair that this committee, because we are dealing with elections, every time when there is an election among the certain countries, one of our members must go there, because we are building knowledge on electoral processes from different countries and how are they harmonized and how can we improve our, although is that we have the best democracy in Africa, but that the execution or implementation during difficult times of election, we can still learn from other countries. We can still learn, there's still a lot of scope. Because like last time when I went to Mauritius, then that was the first time I realized that in every voting station, then you have got cubicles. Those with a surname starting from that to that, they vote to this cubicle, and then those from surname that and that to that. It's almost like sub voting stations to actually manage that. And there's been a lot more faster. Yes. And so they lifted a lot. So what are you saying on the business plan, honorable members? We just have time pressures.
I propose adoption.
Honorable Gumede proposed adoption, and then Honorable Dambuza agrees
to it.
Thank you. And do you reserve your...
No problem.
Oh, you don't reserve this time your support?
There's no problem.
There is no need to engage the party line. you deal with this according to your conscience. Thank you very much for your support on Honorable Fickland, and I think that is very constructive and progressive. And there are things that we differ, there are things that there's no need to differ. You know, it's. Can you imagine somebody says now they don't support a budget? What does that mean? It means that the budget must not be approved, and then the department must close. Sure. You know. But okay. No, thanks. Then without any contra, then the business plan is adopted, and then Adam will just look at certain areas where you can improve the measurability of the target on the program. Because where you just simply say that all minutes must be approved, you should be having a certain number of meetings that you are going to hold in a year. Because we hold a meeting once a week, then it should be able to give us a total number of meetings to be held, and then per quarter how many meetings. And then we're not talking about special meetings. Special meetings will always eliminate. But you must target the meetings that are obligatory that you are going to have. And then we may cancel certain meetings on certain weeks because of certain programs. But at least we will account on the basis of what we have done. That improves the measurability of those targets. Honorable members, I think we will deal next week with three sets of minutes, or four, or whatever. We should be able to deal with those minutes. We'll have a look at them, and then you should be able to send them to yourselves, and then we also deal with them. On that score, then this meeting is adjourned. I just hope that, honorable members, tomorrow we are debating the budget 5 of Home Affairs.